Deneen, are you
Your
there?
Your conference is being recorded.
Yep, I'm here, Jake. I'm glad to hear you.
Okay, great.
I've heard quite a few beeps, so I think we've got some folks that have joined us, so we'll wait just a couple more minutes, and then we'll get started.
Sounds good.
All right. Are you in Bismarck, Jake, or in Fargo?
I'm in Fargo at home.
Okay, good. Have you got your feet up?
I'm just sitting at the kitchen table.
Are you supposed to get the cold weather?
Yes. It was already 1 below when I finished snow blowing all the snow out of my driveway and sidewalk.
I didn't go out today, so I guess I did for a brief. It was brief to go get the mail.
Tomorrow I think it's going to be nasty, and then Wednesday night will be, I think, kind of brutal.
Well, hopefully there'll be a warming trend soon. I did see I don't even know if it was a Minot news station or where it was, is that we have accumulated, or they had accumulated 35 inches of snow already, and normal for this time of year was 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm, the rivers here, you know, going through Fargo, the Cheyenne and the Red are still really high, so, and with all the water saturating the fields everywhere, it's a little concerning.
Yeah, it sure is. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started for this evening's call, and I just want to thank Jake Reuter that has joined us tonight from the Department of Human Services, who's going to talk to us about Money Follows the Person and person-centered practice that is being implemented, I believe, throughout the state of North Dakota through the Department of Human Services. So if by chance it gets where you are, we're recording this call, but if it gets a little bit noisy, if you can either mute your phone, or you can also do it by to mute by pressing pound or *6, and then to unmute it's *6. And Jake, when you start, do you want to let people know if you want to hold off on questions till the end, or if you want to take them as you go? That's entirely up to you. So without further ado, thank you, Jake, for joining us tonight for this call. And we will post this also up on our website, so in case folks that have missed this call tonight, they can go up and listen to it there too. So thank you again, Jake, for joining us tonight.
Well, happy to do it. Always enjoy visiting with you and all of the families that it's such a great thing that you do to support each other in making sure that the kids are getting the kind of supports and services they need to be at home. So what we'll do tonight is we'll address two things. One, the Money Follows the Person grant, just give you kind of an update on where we're at. And then I'm going to talk about the technical assistance around person-centered practice that the North Dakota Department of Human Services is receiving. And so maybe what we'll do is if there's questions after I talk about the grant, we can address those, and then we can walk through the person-centered practice information, and then if you guys have questions, we can address them as we go along. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm Jake Reuter, the Money Follows the Person Grant Program Administrator for the Department of Human Services. I've been in that role since 2007, and, you know, we initially thought the grant was going to be a basically a 5-year effort, and now we're here in 2019 and still going strong. We initially were expecting to have to end the Money Follows the Person transition program December of 2018, but what occurred is that the Congress passed the Extenders Act actually 3 different times earlier this year and added $254 million to the grant and made it available to the 44 grantees that are still participating in the process. The best thing about the Extenders Act is that it allowed transitions in all of 2019, which we've participated in. It allows us to transition in 2020 and 21 if we have funds available. And so, as I said, North Dakota is continuing the transitions, and we will do that as long as dollars are available. At this point, we have grant dollars left that were awarded to us in 2016 to continue transitioning in all of 2020 and for most of the year 21 without getting any of that new money, that $254 million that was added this year. So that's great. And Lenore, as we've talked about the transition work, what we found is that it really has helped educate the system around where the gaps in services are, as well as some of the opportunities to address needs that have otherwise been not considered, such as trying to support workforce development, additional training, and, of course, issues around affordable, accessible housing and potentially development of, you know, some sort of alternative rental assistance beyond the federal housing vouchers that are available. Right now, we plan to continue our work on our housing initiative and workforce development. We are in a collaborative contract with the North Dakota State Council on Developmental Disabilities, with the North Dakota Association of Community Providers on a workforce development project. It's a grant that we've been working with for the last couple of years and will go through September 30th of 21. And it's designed to recruit and retain direct support professionals as well as qualified service providers so that if people wish to stay home, that the staff would be available to serve them. The other initiative, housing supports, we've been working with Minot State University since about 2010 to increase the housing stock and or address housing related issues to really support folks staying at home. One of the key areas that result from that collaborative work around housing is the Housing Incentive Fund, which has helped build several affordable housing projects around the state the last several years. But it also has helped educate the department around the need to consider housing as part of the social determinants of health and make sure that they understand that housing is foundational to any of the work that we do as the Department of Human Services. So those two issues continue to be primary in addressing the barriers to long-term successful community living. And then the other thing I just thought would be helpful for folks to be aware of related to Money Follows the Person is that we're actually funding the two things that are going on with the technical assistance we're receiving for person-centered practice, and those two things are training for both administrative and team leads within the department, and hopefully at some point some broader training down the road, more broad-based. Maybe, for example, a conference on person-centered practice sometime next year. That's one of the things that we've talked about. And then the other part of that is really project management services. We're going to be paying for that part of the person-centered practice work so that someone from the outside can help department staff facilitate the work that goes into assessing where we're at, working with our partners, including family and service users and advocacy organizations, around their comments, input, and direction on how the department can be more person-centered. So I guess in summary related to the grant itself, we're going to continue transitioning, again, all the way through this year. We'll transition folks from the nursing facilities and intermediate care facilities in all of 2020. And as I said, as funds allow, we'll continue that in 21. Will the grant be sustained long term? I don't know the answer. There's another new bill on the table in the Senate now that is looking at a permanent extension of the grant, funding it at $450 million a year. That was introduced by Senator Grassley and I forget the senator's name from Oregon, but there's a bipartisan bill in the Senate that's been introduced. So questions around the grant, any questions that you guys have that you've been wondering about or that wasn't clear? Any questions from the group?
Mike, Jake, just maybe one. For families that have a youth with a disability, what types of things, if they were looking at housing or transitioning without looking at maybe institutionalized care, what kind of things could the Money Follows the Person grant maybe assist them with?
That's a good question. You know, the grant itself, eligibility for the grant requires someone to be in a institutional setting for 90 days or more and have Medicaid pay for at least the last day. And then what happens if they're eligible for the grant, then the grant pays for the for example, the DD waiver service for the first year. It would also make available $3,000 for moving-related costs, you know, to set up their apartment or the return to the family home. And so that money can be used very flexibly for, modifications, for equipment, for household items, all those sorts of things. It's a very, very flexible funding opportunity to help folks return to the community or to their family home. Now, two other options do exist that aren't Money Follows the Person grant proper. And those are transition dollars that we have available to us as a result of the grant. We get a higher federal Medicaid match for folks that are participating in the grant. And because there's a higher match, the state doesn't have to spend as much of its required 50% share. And so part of those dollars are set aside, and we are able to flexibly use those for enhancement of community support. So we do two things with that money. One is we are able to assist folks that are coming out of the state hospital or the Life Skills and Transition Center that don't qualify for the grant, meaning they might be moving you know, might not have been in the institution 90 days, or maybe they're moving to a group home, or maybe they're moving to an ICF situation and aren't ready to go back to the community. So we have dollars that we can use very flexibly to help them reestablish in their new community environment, whatever that might be. And the second option is for those folks that might have been in a community ICF or transitional living situation, maybe in a community psychiatric or substance use treatment program, we're able to help those folks also return to the community and use up to $1,500 for setup costs. So there is some flexibility. The other thing that happens is that we have a rental assistance program for those that move actually through the grant, and so we are able to assist with the deposit, but also ongoing rent until the housing voucher is available. So I know that's a little long and might be a little unclear to folks, but it really depends on what you're eligible for. I have no wiggle room for eligibility for the grant. It has to be 90 days and Medicaid funded and a community residence before I can use the grant dollars. Deneen, does that answer the question, or were you specifically asked or hoping for something else or other information?
Nope, that was good. Thank you.
Okay. Again, I just want to say thank you to everyone for your support and any participation you've had in the grant work, because the Money Follows the Person process is really intended to help us look globally as a state on ways to use our Medicaid dollars to enhance community-based supports for anyone that is on Medicaid and has a disability of some kind. And so anyone, and especially all your moms and dads out there that have a child, whether they're 2 or 22 or 42, we want to be sure that our system is responding to the needs that you have in supporting your child's community involvement and integration into the community. So, okay. Other questions on the grant? And if not, I'll switch over to the person-centered practice work.
Anyone have any questions so far? Okay.
Well,
did I lose you?
I'm here. I think my finger touched the mute button. Sorry.
Oh.
People always want to mute me, so when I do it myself, they're always happy. Anyway. So earlier this year, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid and the Administration on Community Living, they made available the opportunity to apply for technical assistance around person-centered planning, person-centered thinking, and person-centered practice. Really not dissimilar than, the family-centered work that you guys do already. But this opportunity was as a result of funding that developed a national center on advancing person-centered practice and systems. And so they offered the opportunity for states, tribes, and to apply for technical assistance. There were 33 applications, and North Dakota was one of the 15 states selected to participate in the process. The technical assistance offers up to 100 hours of support from subject matter experts on person-centered practice to help us take a look at how we do a business and to make it person-centered in all that we do, whether it's a policy or a procedure, the way we pay for services, how we interact with families or individuals themselves, the forms we use, the way that we provide services. And so the department applied for the grant or the technical assistance and was awarded, and we've been working with the Human Research Institute as part of that process. They're the ones that have the contract with the federal government to provide the person-centered practice technical assistance. And they're the same folks that have worked with North Dakota on the behavioral health assessment, on developing information around the 1915I, and in really providing information to our legislators to advance the behavioral health system, including many of the things that have gone into addressing changes or improvements to the autism waiver, to the DD waiver, to the, you know, the behavioral health system, to the 1915I work. So we really appreciate HSRI's work with North Dakota, and we're fortunate enough to get our Bevan Croft, who is a member of their staff, to work with North Dakota on this effort. So the goal that we have as a state is dramatic. I mean, it's our goal to develop and execute a statewide plan to enhance overall commitment to person-centered practice for all disability populations served by the department and all of its multiple service partners, to ensure that the system reflects the state's values of person-centeredness. I want you to know that we've had people ask us how come we decided to look at the entire department and all the services that we offer. And, you know, we said a little naively that we didn't know better. We thought if we're going to do this, we might as well make sure that we do it comprehensively across all divisions within the department. And so the way that this came about is we developed a cross-division work group, meaning that there was a representative from developmental disabilities, from the autism waiver, from our aging and disabilities staff, from Volk Rehab, from our human service centers, the Developmental Disabilities Division, Medicaid. And that group came together, submitted the application cooperation with Chris Jones, our executive director. Chris was actively involved with the application process. He was made very supportive of the work, and once we have been awarded, he has been involved with his executive leadership team, as well as the division directors and supervisory staff on the opportunity that we have to work with this technical assistance process. So that's an exciting thing, you guys. I mean, we don't often get an entire department leadership group to support any one thing, and the fact that they're on board is really fantastic. So what we've done, we've been working with the technical assistance group basically since the middle of June, and we're working in federal fiscal year. So our first year was actually about, you know, 4 months long. It ended in September, and we started our second year October 1st. And during that process, the Aging Services Division decided to be our pilot. And so what we've done with them is we've had their staff complete an internal assessment around person-centered practice. We are working on identifying service users and family groups and advocacy organizations to provide input on their experience with the Aging Services Department. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about the waiver, our state-funded community-based services, talking about Older American Act services, Vulnerable Adult Protective Services, and our Ombudsman Program. And so we want feedback and a good dialogue around what people's experiences have been with the department, and especially around the issue of being person-centered. Are we putting the person at the center, making them the expert, understanding what's important to them, and trying to balance the work that we do with what's important for making sure that, you know, we have choice involved, that folks are living, working in the places that they want to with the supports they need to be successful. Right now, the other thing we're working on is we have a group, including the ARC and Protection and Advocacy. Now they're coordinating our effort to identify all the organizations like Family Voices that are involved with families, service users, and or as an advocacy organization, so that we can take advantage of those groups to provide direct input on a regular basis to the work that we do. The other thing that I wanted to talk about are the three primary goals of the person-centered practice, and then we can talk about questions. And so the first goal that we have this year is leadership education and awareness. And so by the end of March of 2020, we want to be sure that all members of the Department of the Human Services staff, especially executive leadership and division leaders and program administrators, have a real sound foundation on person-centered practice, and with a focus on, you know, how do they assist their division in looking at themselves, working with service users, family, and advocacy organizations to identify what the needs are for system change to work towards, you know, sound person-centered practices in all the ways that we do business. The second goal is participant engagement and communication. And so over the next year, we want to make sure that participant engagement creates a participant guide. We do an asset map, which is identification of those groups that are they're able to provide input and active leadership around how we as a department do business. And then make sure that there's a really diverse service user and family communication process so that, for example, when a change comes up, that there's active engagement so that the people that use the services, family, and advocacy groups have say before there's been decisions made. That would be a new way of doing business, wouldn't it?
So oh,
you
my.
Guys had up, wouldn't that change the world?
It really would.
It would. And so we really want to push for that. That's one of the foundational issues that the person-centered practice technical assistance process requires is active engagement and voice from families, service users, and organizations that advocate on behalf of those folks at the table as we make decisions about what a policy should look like. Are folks having a positive experience when they apply for services? Are we listening? What about the assessment? Is it strength-based versus, you know, looking primarily at, you know, needs? And are we identifying the goals of the person that's participating in the service work? And so, you guys, I really hope that as we move this forward, that your voices are loud and clear at the table when it comes to, for example, the DD division or the autism waiver review or whatever it might be. And so that your voice can be heard and it will influence what system change occurs around person-centered practice. And then the third goal is system-wide assessment. And so what we want to be sure that we do is that as each department, division goes through a person-centered practice self-assessment, that will result in a plan for each division to make the changes necessary to become person-centered in all that they do. And of course, that effort will include a number of things. First, it will be an assessment that the staff do themselves, and then there'll be active engagement with family service users and organizations of advocacy. It will include identification then of what needs to change, what are the strengths, and then some decision-making around how to make modifications to the way we do business in order to operate as a person-centered division and or department based on the work that we've done. And so it is a lot, folks. I mean, it's a demanding amount of work. And so that's why the aging services pilot is so important for us, to try to get this right from the beginning, to develop a process that each division can go through that will inform the next one, so they can see the value of going through the assessment, identifying need, developing a work plan on how to change, how to engage service users it throughout the process, not only now, but in the long term, so that the department is person-centered as a way of doing business. And I know that Chris Jones has talked about that as a key strategic initiative of his, and he's supporting this work and has been at the table throughout. And so I know there's probably a million things that I could talk about, but I thought it would be a great overview and just to emphasize the critical need for your active involvement as we look at each division individually to identify where the gaps are, where the needs are, where the strengths are, and then what needs to change in the long term. So questions, comments, thoughts, anything would be greatly appreciated.
Any questions at all for Jake?
You guys are letting me off too easy.
Don't be shy. I think, Jake, I am like literally excited about this project because I think it's been so needed for a very long time, and I'm just ecstatic that Chris is very involved in the process. So that's encouraging also.
Absolutely. We couldn't make this work possible without Chris's leadership and support. They've made it a strategic initiative at the executive committee level within the department. They've assigned an executive lead. We're paying for project management. I don't pretend to believe that this is all going to be easy, because it's not. It's a pretty daunting task, and it's not going to happen overnight. But I think that we've laid the foundation for the work to be substantive and substantially, successful in the long run. And so, and the hope is that when we're done with, you know, the assessment and planning, that we'll have a training process that's in place, not only for staff, but also information available for individual service users and families as they start to engage with the system, so that they understand what, you know, basic expectations are around person-centered practice, person-centered planning, person-centered thinking, and or family-centered thinking as you guys think about it. But we want to be sure that, you know, one of the long-term outcomes is that that training is there, sustainable, for DHS staff, for our partner staff, for families, service users, guardians, that kind of extensive training is one of the outcomes that we see vital to the long-term success of the work.
It's awesome. I'm excited. I will look forward to the work ahead. So
yes. So yeah. And you guys, Teresa and Pam Mack at P&A, and Kirsten from the ARC are volunteered to help coordinate what we call the asset map, and that is identification of groups like Family Voices, like the Advocates Leading Their Lives group that's coordinated by the DD Council. That's, you know, the folks that are involved with services with from all disability populations. Mental Health of America, you know, all of the groups that are out there. So if you guys have any kind of information that you want to share with Teresa or Pam Mack or Kirsten, please feel free to do that, because we're getting great technical assistance around how to do that, and that will help us really develop the way that service users can bring their voice to the table.
Sure will. We will do that.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions for Jake at all? I think you did a great job, Jake.
Well, that's very kind. I really appreciate the time that everyone made available for the call. If you have anybody moving from, you know, an ICF or even a hospital setting, we've moved a couple of kids specifically from long-term hospitalization back to their home with their mom and dad. And so don't forget that as another choice. If you run into a family that's struggling with trying to get a child home, Deneen, or maybe someone on the call has a child in a hospital and they're wanting to bring them home, sometimes those DD case or program managers may forget about the grant, and we don't want that to happen. You know, that sometimes that $3,000 or more that we can bring to help, you know, bring equipment or furniture or whatever it might be, so that the child can come home, we want to be sure that's available. So we definitely want to do all we can to assist folks with transitioning back home from, the life skills or in transition center or an intermediate care facility or a psychiatric residential treatment facility or a hospital back home. So look forward to continued work with you guys, and hopefully, especially around the person-centered practice work, we can engage as we go through each division and as we work to form that centralized voice to the department around the way we do business, especially on person-centered practice.
That's awesome, Jake. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome, and take care, everybody.
All right. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5.